Hallå, det här är Vinden podcast från Kåsa i Varberg. Jag heter David Kalitski och här försöker jag ta reda på svaret på några funderingar som jag har om svensk surf. Dagens fråga är, hur bygger du brädor? Jag har gjort två delar i den här Shaper-serien tidigare, avsnitt 22 och 24. Så kolla gärna in dem också om du inte kan få nog av nördigt brädsnack. I den här tredje delen gästas studion av Manuel Huth som bygger brädor under namnet Pray for Surf. I sin källare i Stockholm handshapar han retrodoftande och unika fiskar för svenska vågor, men också för den något större marknaden i sitt andra hemland USA. Så på lite kokig engelska från min sida, här är mitt snack med Manny. Varsågoda! Welcome to Varberg, en Vinden podcast.
Tack.
Awesome. Tack. How are you?
I'm good. Happy to be here. Super stoked. A little nervous.
Yeah.
I'm a lot nervous. I don't know why, but you know, I have stage fright. I'm sure it'll be fine.
Yeah, sure. But did you come here yesterday?
Yes, last night.
From Stockholm?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I drove down.
And you live in Stockholm full time?
Yeah, I've been there 3 years. Mm-hmm. Min fru, she's Swedish, svensk.
Svensk, so, right?
But we met in New York, and she came to New York when she was like in school, college.
So okay.
She was very young, and basically she grew up as an adult in New York, but she her family's Swedish, but they were being raised in her father's an engineer, so in like countries in Africa and stuff like that, and then came back to Stockholm when they were like 8 or 9, and then she left to New York when she was like whatever college age, 18 17 18.
Okay,
so she really spent like she became an adult really in New York, but she's Swedish, you know, like she's you know, raised in Bodhisattva, and so
cool,
we're back here to raise a family.
All right.
Yeah.
How's your Swedish going?
It's going okay. Yeah. I haven't done SFE because it's just like so busy with the kids and things I'm doing. But I try to just practice. I've been doing Duolingo, which is okay. But I just try to use it as much as I can when I do interactions and stuff like that. And everybody's really helpful.
We can do this in Swedish if you want to.
Well, this will basically be a 5-minute interview. You know, so, your ticket home surfing. Yeah, that's going to be the whole interview.
Thank you, bye.
Yeah. But, you know, everyone in Stockholm and many parts of Sweden speak very good English, which is great because I don't have to be worried about taking care of business.
Yeah.
But I try to use my Swedish, and people are willing to talk to me in Swedish. So it's fine.
And what about at work? Is that just...
I work for my father-in-law, you know, kind of helping him out. And then the rest is just trying to do my own business.
Yeah.
So eventually I would like to get work where I'm more in society, you know, not like so sheltered, because that's a big part of streamlining like my Swedish.
Yeah.
But, you know, my daughter speaks Swedish, and my son will speak Swedish when he starts talking. So it's around. I'm confident I'll have, you know, pretty good Swedish in a year or two. Yeah, I'll get there.
Yeah. But are you going to go back and forth between Sweden and the US? Or?
We do a lot because I have my parents there, and, you know, they're older. We have to make sure we're you know, staying with them. But I love Sweden. I love the language. So, I'll pick it up.
Yeah, for sure. Did you grow up in New York?
Yes. Yeah. I'm from the Lower East Side of New York. And that's like a pretty big part of who I am. So I grew up there. Yeah.
Cool. Did you start surfing on Long Island or?
So the first time I was exposed to surfing was in Hawaii. My brother lived there for many years, and that's where he started surfing. And then they took me out. Our friend Tyler took me out. He's from Hawaii. And the first time I went out, I didn't even make it out to the break. Put me on like a longboard in Waikiki, and I was like seasick and just floundering. He kind of looked back at me like, oh, what a coward. And I was just like, oh, I can't make it. But like, even from then, I was like, I want to do this.
Right.
Which is weird because it's not like most people be like, oh, I pounded for my first wave and it was a really amazing sensation. I didn't even make it to the wave. And something was like, no, this is for me.
You're stubborn.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
I am very stubborn. And then I really learned to surf in Rockaway Beach, New York. Between there and then, I obviously got a lot from visiting my brother in Hawaii. He now lives in New York, but when I go out there, those trips out there, I'd spend maybe, you know, a week to 2 weeks to a month. And that was really formative for me in my like idea of what the culture of surfing, what informed me of what that might be.
Yeah.
So there in Rockaway is like, there's but two different places. Obviously I was majority surfing, learning to surf in Rockaway, which is a whole, a whole other thing. It's super, like the sand in Rockaway is very soft and the sandbars are very shifty. So the wave has a lot of personality and it's changing, which when you're learning can be a little bit, especially when you're learning as an adult, right? So I started learning to surf 20 years ago. I was, you know, 30. And it's like, I don't have that intuitive, you know, kid thing where you just kind of process and go and learn. And so the wave is changing. I don't know what I'm doing. Super counterintuitive. I'm on a short board because I want to learn, you know, like, it was like, you need a long board. I'm like, I don't want to do that. No. Right. Don't tell me what to do. And then, so it was just, it was pretty challenging. But yeah, you know, it's fun.
Yeah.
It's still fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been a good season on the East Coast this year, right?
Yeah. It's, Jersey got like, you know, phenomenal surf.
Yeah.
Heavy. He's super heavy, you know, nothing to play around with, but Jersey always has like that's an amazing place to surf.
Is it more consistent there than Rockaway Beach?
I find it to be, well, definitely more than Rockaway Beach, but you could say that like Long Beach is, you know, more consistent, and you know, obviously all the parts of Long Island have some really great breaks. I just really enjoy New Jersey, so I just think they have great surf and a really, really cool surf culture.
Yeah.
I mean, Montauk has all types of waves going on over there, but I don't really get to spend much time there.
All right.
Yeah. So.
So what's your local spot in Sweden?
Oh, Tura.
All right.
Although when I first like Googled surfing in Sweden, this, am I saying it right? Varberg?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Varberg, it came up as like Surf City, Sweden.
Yeah.
But yeah, Tura is amazing. Mm. And the first time I surfed there, I was really, really pleasantly surprised, because I was kind of expecting to come here and be like, yeah, I'll just take whatever I can get, but I'll try to like fly to Portugal as much as I can, or, you know, other parts of Europe are really close. And as soon as I like surfed in Tura, I was like, this is it for me anyways. This is its own thing. This isn't like, you know, a version of surfing and I have to get a better version someplace else. This is like its own type of wave, and in its own way it's to me way more consistent than Rockaway, in the sense that yes, it is like primarily wind swell, or it's not primarily, it's all wind swell, but because it's like rock bottom, like the wave kind of has a more consistent personality.
Yeah.
It's not shifting. It is true, like other elements are shifting, but to me it's way more consistent. And yeah, I love it. You know, it's its own thing, and I'm very much into Swedish surfing and surfing the Baltic itself.
Cool.
Yeah. So I love it.
Yeah. Nice. I usually start off with a sort of a personality test.
Okay. I'm sure I'll fail, but go ahead.
It's very easy. You get two options and you have to choose one of them.
Okay.
Yeah. So right-hander or left-hander?
Left.
Always?
Oh, you mean for waves or like?
Oh, whatever.
I'm left-handed. So that's all.
No, I mean waves. Yeah.
Oh, right. 100%. Right. Yeah.
Beach breaks or point breaks?
I'd say leaning towards point breaks, but only because I quote unquote grew up surfing, you know, learned to surf in beach breaks.
Yeah.
So point breaks to me are exotic and really cool and super consistent. So I have a deep affinity for them. But a good beach break is pretty incredible too. So yeah,
it deals with the crowd better too, I think.
The beach break. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I've learned to appreciate surfing among people, because before I was pretty salty on it and I get switched off. If I looked out and I saw too many people out, I won't even go out.
Uh-huh.
But now, you know, I've learned to like appreciate dealing with people and the navigation of that.
Yeah.
Swedish surfers have a pretty good temperament. Not that they're not without their things, but you know, I think the attitude's pretty good. As soon as it places where the attitude gets to be like pretty negative, I'm out. Like I'm not, you know. But otherwise, it's like most of the issues with me and like surfing around other people can really mess up my head.
Yeah.
So even if like everyone's cool and nobody's like giving me a hard time, I can like get myself out of my game with that. But I'm getting better with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
All right. Longboard or shortboard?
Shortboard.
Always.
Yes, but
since the first time in Hawaii when you
yeah that was it, and then I like was with the shortboard, and again I went about it kind of ass backwards. Like I learned on a shortboard, so yeah. It took me that much longer to learn, and it also kind of stunted certain developments in my surfing.
Mm.
But as I get older, like I'm and with shaping, I've become more interested in shaping longer stuff, and I want to ride longer stuff. It's just what I'm shaping now. It's like as soon as I get like, oh, maybe I'll shape something longer, then this other new thing happens and I get like deeper into the path I'm on. So I don't know when that's going to happen, but I anticipate at some point I'll be shaping and riding longer things. Mm. And I definitely have an appreciation for it as an art form. I watch longboarding and longboards as a shape and as a build are like, they're incredible.
Yeah.
So I dig longboards, I dig single fins, but I've always been a shortboard guy.
Yeah. Cool. Dawn Patrol or Sunset Session?
That's tough. I don't get to Dawn Patrol much anymore with the kids.
Yeah. You were almost had one this morning.
Right? Yeah. That would have been had I gotten the water.
It was just a little bit too small, right?
Yeah. I'll paddle out in almost anything, but yeah. I was like, maybe just get some rest. But Sunset Sessions are pretty amazing. So I'll say Dawn Patrol for now.
Yeah. Okay, so these ones are a bit more complicated, maybe.
Okay.
I'm sure surfing was great before the leash and the camera phone. Or, sure, whatever, Grandpa. I'm going to stream the surf cam on my phone.
Oh, yeah, no. I'm a grandpa on that one. Yeah. The leash, I don't mind the leash. I'm not old enough in surfing to really whatever.
No. But you get nostalgic about like back in the day surfing?
Well, just the way, it's not that I'm nostalgic about back in the day surfing because I think that surfing, it depends on what period back in the day, right? So if you're like in maybe the 70s, it might've been pretty harsh, you know, as far as I could read about. 80s, I don't know, but it's more that the way things are now, I think people are losing out on the experience a little bit.
Yeah.
So it doesn't affect me that much, but if I was going to choose one, I'd be like, without the technology, your experience is going to be better.
Yeah.
And I use Instagram and all that, but yeah. I'm with Grandpa on that one.
Yeah, you don't want to be totally outside of society, right?
Yeah, I like to think of myself as a loner, but the truth is I grew up in a city, I'm not as isolating as I think I am. So yeah, I like it's cool to share something with other people, but maybe not like 100 people, maybe like, 10 or 15 is a good number.
Yeah. All right. So on the subject of shaping.
Mm.
A super fast board that don't turn at all, or a slower board that's super easy to carve.
Mm. It's hard. That I like them both.
Yeah.
Like I'm okay with, as I've gotten older, I've realized one, I'm not that great of a surfer. Two, maneuvers are cool, but I think that's something that was like kind of fed to me through the surf media. Like when I first started surfing again, I was an adult. I was like 30. So I kids also consume media, but I really like looked at what was being presented to me and try to hone in on like, okay, that's what it is.
Mm.
And at that time it was, competitive surfing was very much like at the forefront of, surfing. But then you also had like Thomas Campbell movies coming out, like Sprout and then like Modern Collective. So there was a couple of different things going on there. But as I get older, it's like if, speed is awesome, it's fun. And also like you can turn enough, if you can turn enough so that you can maybe check back into the wave and get back into power source and go again.
Yeah.
Then you have that's it. You're good. So I'm good with that. And I've made some fish surfboards that they're pretty wide set fins. And so when you drop, you'll like drift a little bit. And then once you hit the base of the wave, if you can control that drift, you really like slingshot.
Mm.
And also like speed gives you maneuverability. So the faster you're going, you will be able to move. So, you know, you gain some, but if it was like super straight board, like Simmons style or whatever, yeah. I mean, I'll take both. Yeah. I'll take both. So.
Is there a happy medium, or does it, like, do you have to compromise either way?
I'm trying to get to that medium.
Yeah.
So like the board I have now, it's actually not have, but the one I made, I'm kind of working through or breaking in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm experiencing some things that are like really new for me, and it's really getting me inspired to kind of get to that that midpoint between speed and control.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing maybe new ways to do it. So yeah, I for me, the probably for most shapers, but for me that's like a target. And it informs my surfing and grows my surfing. But that question is like, could like power my interest in shaping for like the next 15 years easily.
It's so, almost like a 3-point question, like paddling, turning, speed.
Paddling is, yeah. So the paddling one is a great one to throw in there, because you want to have a board that paddles well.
Yeah.
But I've definitely made boards that kind of don't paddle that good. But once they get going, like you gain a lot.
Yeah.
But if I like hand that board off to somebody else, like if you give someone a board that doesn't paddle well, the likelihood that they're going to write that board off is pretty high.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to make the adjustment, you know, like, well, I had to drop in too late, or, you know, I'm going over the falls.
Mm.
Whereas for me, I think it's weird that I'll make a board and then, maybe it's not weird because I made it, but I'll make a board and I'll spend all this time trying to figure out what that board really is. But somebody will buy a board from somebody else, and then if they can't figure it out in the first like 5 sessions, they're like, it sucks. But it's like, you didn't even make, somebody else made that.
Yeah.
So maybe like you don't understand, you know, maybe it's worth like giving it a chance, at least to see what's there. Maybe it's not for you.
Yeah.
But I think that's a very fascinating part of like surfers, where it's like they want that immediate, not like gratification, but like they get easily discouraged. It's like, it's not working. It's deteriorating my surfing. And that's definitely like, you know, I can't have that. You know, I can't go out and have a bad session when the waves are good.
No.
That's super painful. And I get it, but it's like sometimes like I'll have those sessions and at the end, like a light will come on, you know, and now that board is giving me something that I did not have before.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's what people are kind of missing out on.
Yeah.
But I get it. You know, I get it. You paid, you know, $600 to $800 to $1,000 for a board. Your expectations are high, your passion is there, and everyone else is shredding and you're struggling. You know, you look like a kook. It's like, no, I can surf, really. Like, believe me, it's just the, you know. So I understand, but I think it's important to push through that.
Yeah. It's when that happens to me, I just feel like I have a bad day surfing, you know?
Yeah.
But most of the times it is adjusting to the board or the fins or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, it takes time.
It takes time. Sure. And I try to think of like, you know, if you watch a surf contest, there's some heats where it's like one of the surfers doesn't do, you know, really doesn't show up.
Yeah.
And it's like that happens to these guys, are like, they're so dialed in and they have their takeoff. They can show up and blow up almost anywhere with the surfing. So if that happens to that guy, I need to cut myself some slack.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to be like the best version of my surfing every time I go out, but somehow like I expect that of myself.
Yeah, it's just the world champ gets a like 1.2.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And so if that can happen to him, then maybe if I suck today at Tura, you know, maybe it's not a big deal, you know?
Yeah. So how long have you been shaping yourself?
So I started shaping almost as soon as I started surfing. I basically started shaping before I even knew how to surf. But I'd say seriously shaping, it's been about 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And by serious, I mean me trying to pay attention to how a board is supposed to be made. So before that, my first board, like most people, I tore off the lamination on a board and reshaped it a little bit, glassed it all wrong. I put is a PU blank with polyester resin, and I just put the lam on, and that's it. I didn't put any seal coat or, you know, gloss. So it was still tacky, and it, you know, it just, yeah, I just, it was not correct. I glassed on these crazy wooden fins that I made. So I learned not to do that, but yeah. I've been the whole time, maybe I'd buy a board here or there, and then I'd shape a board, and then I rode that board in all conditions. Mm-hmm. It was like 2 feet or 10 feet. I took the same board out. The glass jobs were horrendous. But you know, so I've been doing that for a while.
Yeah.
And then when we discussed this before, but at one point I was like, oh, maybe I'll have a surf shop. Just out of the interest, again, I have no interest in selling things, but somehow I thought like, oh, a surf shop would be fun. I know it's
was this in New York?
In New York.
Okay.
Yeah, surf shops are kind of notorious for being like hard businesses to run. It's not like, oh, it's going to run itself or it's going to make money. But I was like, I don't care if I break even, you know, it'd be really fun to have that, but I couldn't, I could acquire wholesale because I got business license. I could acquire wholesale items from certain distributors for things like leashes, wax, and whatever, fins, yeah, but not surfboards. So I was like, oh, I'll make my own surfboards. I kind of know how to shape, but just maybe stop being such a jackass about it and like try to like, you know, do what other people do and how it's done. Mm. So then I started seriously, you know, investigating and investing in, you know, making a proper template and outline and working, you know, turning the rails appropriately and stuff like that.
Mm.
And the shop never took off. I sold a couple of boards. I was getting them glass at Brewer Resin Works in New Jersey. So that basically, because my glass work was like, I can't sell that to people. It's, you know, and also like I want to focus on shaping correctly, yeah, you know, and glassing is a whole art form to itself.
Yeah.
So that was great, but I wasn't selling enough boards to sustain paying for the glass work. So I had to like bite the bullet and start glassing the boards myself.
All right.
Which I knew how to do, but I was like, man, I'm going to really have to study up and get this better, which I'm super grateful for now. Cause I love the full build and the glassing of it. It's definitely hard, but it's like super, super close to the passion. Like it's a big part of the passion of building for me is getting that glass work done.
Yeah. That feels like the big hurdle to get into shaping, I think. Glassing is such a mess. Like even just fixing dings, it's a nightmare for me.
And also I work with epoxy because where I work is technically not a legal place to work, and I can't have that level of smell like going on over there. So epoxy is great. I love it, but it's hard. It's hard to glass. It's hard to sand. You know, the color work can be kind of tricky. But you know, it's great stuff, and yeah, I make it work. So yeah, but I think that is a barrier for people is the glass work.
Yeah,
100%.
But did you shape for friends and other people from the beginning?
For myself, like in the beginning, I was just shaping boards for myself. I mean, I would love to shape for someone else, but you know, I'm not a good listener. Like when I used to, when I was a kid, I used to DJ, right? It was in New York. And, you know, just like, I wasn't no big DJ, but just do some parties here and there, whatever. But I was the type of DJ, if you were to come up and be like, oh, can you put this on? I'd be like, no. And not to be like, but I'd be like, if you want to hear your own music, then what am I here for? You know, like, yeah. I know it sounds kind of like a jerk thing to say, but that's just how my mind works. So
I think that's classic DJ mentality.
Yeah, so you know, with shaping, it's like, yeah, I love to shape for other people, and I have shaped some really great boards for other people, but I understand why maybe, you know, like some people I hear the stories like, oh, I was shaping, then my friend asked me for a board, and then he asked for a board, and kind of like snowballs. But I know why people don't ask me for boards, because like I shape things that make sense for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I want it to make sense for you, but it's hard for me to listen to your surfing.
Yeah.
I'm getting better at that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, made boards for myself. So all my boards are through the lens of my own experience.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But I guess people can relate to like what you're trying to achieve. Also, it doesn't always have to come from the 100% from the customer, right?
No.
But you can get input. Like I need a board for mushy Tura waves.
Yeah.
Do your thing, kind of.
I think that there's a lot there. So I think, not to toot my own horn, not that it matters because not really many people are buying boards from me, but I think there's a lot to be gained from working with a shaper like myself, because you get that person's experience. And then you get that new perspective. And like the boards work, like you're not, it's, you know, it's not a thing of like, because I've made some boards that I want, like there's a saying like it doesn't not work. So yeah, like everything works, but I definitely made some boards where I'm like, yeah, that you just you don't
sinker.
Take, yeah, it, you know, it's just maybe that's like a better body board or something, but don't try to stand up on that. But the boards I make, they work really well for me.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of, do you want to make those adjustments in your surfing? And I think that there's a great benefit to that, because it benefited me. I'm stubborn. Once I think I know the right way, I don't want to let go of that. So my boards have forced me to expand and grow my surfing, and you know, my posture, my perspective, my stance, you know, my technique, all that I've been forced to grow through adaptation. So I think that's something I can share with somebody else, but it takes a fair deal of willingness on their part, you know. To that point, I do try to make my boards affordable.
Yeah.
Because I understand, again, like, you know, I'm not trying to sell you like, I'm not trying to sell you into like a higher skill level, like get this board and you're gonna shred, you know, like that's not really what I'm offering. So I get, you know, maybe a lower price point, you know.
Yeah.
Although then some other board makers get salty if you lower your price point, because then they're like, you're undercutting. But I'm not making enough boards like, you know, to undercut you. But I actually had somebody like come at me on Instagram to be like, yo, you're selling your boards for this much. And it was like kind of somebody who was, I was surprised, like they were, you know, kind of up there in board making. And I was kind of like, you know, sorry, or, you know, I didn't know what to say. So some people get mad about that.
Okay. But I think the big bad guy is the imported boards, if anything, right?
Yeah, but you know, it's easier to take a shot at somebody who's, but at the same time, it's like, I'm not a threat, so whatever. You know what I'm saying?
But do you market your boards just in Sweden or in America and Sweden?
Just through my Instagram. I like, my websites are, yeah, available. You can see it in the States and Sweden. So I try to do it New York, Stockholm, and LA, right, is the kind of like my triangle of where I'm at.
Triangle radness.
Yeah, my radical triangle, dude. But yeah, I mean, I would love to get some boards under people's feet in Sweden, in all those places, you know.
But did you focus on the, because the board you have here is a twin fin?
Yeah, that's a quad.
Is it a quad? Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's like a swallowtail, wide. Did you focus on the fishy boards from the start?
No. So I was like, I got back again to like, all right, I'm in Sweden. It's pretty business friendly. I was like, maybe I'll take another stab at having a shop. my shaping was much better. And I was like, let me, before I like, you know, go to that, start shaping some boards from here, you know, like forget, like I want to have a shop, but put that aside for a minute. You're in a new place, you know, learn the conditions, learn the place. And then from there, I was like, let me start with the fish concept, because it's familiar, it's close to my heart, it works, and that's something maybe people can relate to. And like everything, once I started down that road, it just became like, all right, now I'm stuck in here, because I'm learning all this stuff, all this, like, I'm getting all this design information, it's like elevating my surfing. So yeah, now I'm very focused on the fish, but it's not really intentional. It's just like, there's a lot there.
Yeah.
And, you know, one, like fish is a bit of an overused term in surfing. Like I've seen boards, and I'm not an expert. I don't have any pedigree in shaping, so it's just my opinion. But yeah, I've seen boards where someone's like, you know, this is a new model fish. And I'm like, how is that? That's like a short board that's a little bit wide.
Yeah.
And it's not even like forward point wide. It's just a little wide.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is our, I try to focus on like the traditional fish and then the quote unquote modern fish off of that.
Yep.
So look at a lot of stuff coming out of San Diego, obviously not exclusively. And, you know, when I shape these things, it's like, again, you know, lights turn on. I'm like, oh my God, like this does this. And now I have to adjust to this. And, oh, this is rolling over really well, or this is moving really well, or this is paddling in a certain way. So then I end up having to make, you know, another version of that. And so I'm kind of stuck on the fish thing for now, yeah.
Is the fish shape a common way to start shaping? Because I've seen like a lot of garage shapers, their first board is usually a fish.
I don't know, because it wasn't for me.
Or
I was
just
like,
cheaper to buy this short black?
It's not actually the short, like I can't use a short. So when I make fish here, I don't use a fish blank because it's a lot of extra board, and for some reason I feel it's easier for me to use like a 7-4 blank and cut it down. But you just have to be careful, you don't want to overshape the board because the foam gets pretty soft if it's a PU blank on the inside. So I don't know why other people, I wouldn't start with a fish because I actually think it's kind of a complicated design. When I started, it was like I was trying to make thrusters because that's what was going on back then, and fish were kind of starting to come back and be present again. But in all fairness, I have to use the word thruster loosely. They're just tri-fin kind of pointy shapes, but they were sort of, I wouldn't say they messed up, but they were pretty weird. I started getting to the fish concept more here just because there's a lot of design, you know, just is a rich resource of like the design possibility. But I find it to be kind of a complicated shape.
I think it's useful for Swedish waves because it's thick and wide all through, right?
It definitely has been beneficial. The first board I took out at Tuda was a fish. Yeah. It worked really well there. I see a lot of guys at Tuda with the chippy thrusters. Seems to work well for them. This board is actually pretty chippy itself. And it does seem to, you know, a Tuda's kind of like, it kind of dumps. Yeah. Like there's some power there, but you have, I'm no expert, but what I've experienced there is like kind of two different waves on the same day there. One, you kind of like foams up and sort of crumbles and then starts to build and then flatten out and build again. And then there's another one that's just like a dumping wall and you have to drop and go. And if you can go fast enough, then you can connect some lines. So I frequently ended up surfing like the crumbling, you know, kind of reform, you know, back and forth. They're super fun and the fish kind of works for that. But I found with this board, actually, it doesn't work for that. You have to, not that it doesn't work. Well, yeah, I'll say it doesn't work for that. this one, you need that walled up dumping thing. And because it's thinner and because of the way it paddles, it actually works really well for that.
Does it have more rocker than usual?
I keep my rockers pretty neutral. So maybe at the tail a little bit. It's more, it has some concave. It's actually a little under 20, I think, 19 and change. So that's thinner than I usually go. Yeah. And the rails are pretty pinched. Yeah. So that makes it sort of, it responds. This board is actually, again, forcing me to adapt because I haven't really gotten it good yet, but I had like a you know, epiphany moment with it where it's like it responds in a way that seems like it's going to be very maneuverable, but not, you don't have to surf it off the tail.
Okay.
I think. Anyways, we'll see. But I you know, I see a lot of guys at Tuda with the thrusters and they do pretty well with them.
Yeah.
So.
Can you grab it?
Yeah.
So, because I wanted to, the thing that struck me about it was the tail. Yeah. It's, is that considered a pretty deep swallow?
Yes.
And very like pointy ends?
Yes.
What's the reason behind that?
So I was looking on Sway Locks. There's people in there who are like garage shapers like myself. There's people who are like brand new to shaping. And there's people who have like, who have been there, you know, from the, like they've shaped in the industry or they like really influential figures in shaping. So they have this level of knowledge that's just incredible, and they share it, you know. Opinions can get kind of, some people have really strong opinions there, so I don't really post on there because my skin isn't that thick. But you know, they're sharing stuff that's like, you to have access to that is just like incredible. And mm-hmm. the main thing I get from Sway Locks is that like, is the prevailing philosophy on there, not for everybody, but frequently people say this, is like, do what works for you. Mm. And yeah, this is how like maybe this thing works. Like if you put concave, maybe this happens. But if you're riding it and it's like doing what you need it to do, then, you know, like screw the theory. Like, yeah. it, you know, it's the practice, it's working for you. So just keep doing that.
Yeah.
And I really, to hear that from people who have that much knowledge is very inspirational for me, because that's kind of like my shaping. I live by that now. Mm. You know, it's like, yes, I want to understand what the theory is, but at the end of the day, I go by how it works when I surf it. So with that tail, I was looking at, you know, I was again making some fish, and I was like, all right, let me kind of, I don't have anyone I could talk to about it, right? I can't like call up some guy in San Diego, you know, like, and be like, hey, you know, like share your information with me. So I was going to Sway Locks, and I'd seen some really beautiful fish that had fairly deep, sharp swallows, and were one of the things with my progression in shaping is foiling. So for people who don't know, that's like the way you distribute the volume in the board, right? Is like or imagine like the foil of an airplane wing. It's that kind of streamlining,
Profile.
Yes, yeah. the thickness, and you know, the nose to the middle to the back. So when I was doing boards maybe 8 years ago, for some reason, like there wasn't really foiling them that much. They were kind of, I was kind of making these like blocks. Mm-hmm. So that they were thick in the nose, a little thicker in the middle, and kind of thick at the, just like these like blocks of foam.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of fun riding them. But you know, when you have that, you have great flotation, but that can hang you up when you're paddling mm-hmm. in. Too much float and you're gonna have a hard time getting in. But also they go really fast in like big waves. So you have that thing. That's one of my first adjustments. I was like, kind of hard to paddle in, but man, once this thing is moving, it's like, you know, it's, but then you also have like maneuverability, because then it's harder to sink a rail. And then I wasn't turning my rails that much. So they were like thick rails. Yeah, it was kind of weird. So then I was like looking at, a much more foiled profile for the boards. And that's where I really went heavy into that, and really committed to that deep, sharp swallow, and really foiling down the tail, getting the nose down. It was a little scary, but now that I've done it, it's just like kind of incredible, you know? And it's not that I'm like, oh, I hit the mark, this is the thing, but it's just giving me this information, and it's allowing me to maneuver the board. Again, I don't have to be so much on the tail.
Oh,
It's again, and it's, I'm still researching it, but I really think that this board is going to have a lot to say for itself.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't entirely understand it yet. So, you know.
Oh, interesting. That's because fish design is usually like front-footed surfing, right?
Yep.
But it's hard for me, at least, to be a front-footed surfer but turn well from the back foot. So for me, this sounds good. Like you could be front foot heavy,
yeah,
but still turn.
It's weird because I didn't know, I'm a front footed surfer, but I didn't know that about myself till like 5 years ago. So my friend was like, you know, you're a front footed surfer. I was like, oh, am I? And I do this weird thing when like I can't do airs, but every now and again I'll try to do one. But sometimes I do this weird thing where it's like I spring and I jump, and my board is like stuck in the water. I just jump off of my board. And I'm like, how could that be happening? Because, you know, I used to skateboard, so like I could ollie and stuff. And then I realized, because I was jumping off of my front foot.
Yeah.
So it's like, of course the board stays in the water because I load up off my back foot and then I stomp with the front foot. Mm. So I basically press the board back into the water. But I didn't know I was doing that. So I'm super front footed. And I've kind of learned to sort of utilize my back foot better now.
Yeah.
But so that's really helpful to me to have a board that can maneuver off the front foot.
Yeah.
And you know, the original kind of more classic fish that I made for myself, that was like the epiphany where it's like, I could get low. Mm-hmm. It was like very low center of gravity, and I could surf with my hips, you know, and go really fast. And it, and then I could actually, like, with that speed, like, I could bang out a turn off the lips and off the lips, off the lip. that just did not sound right yet. bang off a turn at the lip in a way that, like, worked for me.
Yeah.
So that is something that the fish has to offer. But again, when you're going to the modern fish kind of zone, you get to take those classic principles and advance them.
Mm.
So that's one of the things I learned, like, at Swalox. There are people who are like, oh, a fish is actually like a back-footed board, which I was like, oh, is it? Like, because that hasn't been my experience. But then they're like, look, there's this like, this moment in surfing where the fish came into being and this you know, amazing stuff happened from that. But they're like, we can keep moving forward.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to be this thing of like trying to recapture that one moment in design experience. And that's what kind of inspired me to be like, okay, well, this is what I know from the fish I made for myself. Let me try to strip that down.
Yeah.
And then I got this and I was like, whoa, like there's now a whole other thing going on there.
Mm.
So I would say like this is a fish, but really a version of a fish.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could call it a modern fish, but if someone were like to say, hey, that's not a fish, I wouldn't even be mad. I mean, it is.
Yeah.
But you know, if I'm not so too hung up on the classification of it, because it's just the design principles come from the fish.
Yeah.
So
well, yeah. When I hear modern fish, I think more of a more pulled in tail, maybe a 2+1 setup, like a pulled in nose as well.
Yeah.
So, and that's almost like a thruster.
Right. Yeah. So I get that classification. That's why it's like I use the term modern fish kind of like with air quotes, yeah. Because
maybe more like Machado modern.
Yeah. I mean, so I try not to pull my tails in too much. I do have a board with the tails pulled in more than I would usually do, but I try not to pull in the tails too much because that's where I'm getting some of the speed from, lot of the speed from. But again, I'm finding that even with that, like this board seems to maneuver really well.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know the jury's not in on that yet. So I'll have to like, you know, update you on like what more I learned on the board.
But this is your most recent shape.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. It's brand new. It's only been out a couple times.
All right.
Yeah.
How big is that one?
It should be 5'7", I think. Yeah. And then I'm actually because of this, the board I'm glassing now is actually a classic fish.
Yeah.
Sort of.
So it's, classic is like Steve Liss.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of that idea. Wider, straighter profiles, super, super wide distance between the points. But this one doesn't have the pointy swallow. It just has the rounded, but it actually put a flex tail in it. So, so again, it's not super classic because it has that, but someone had also mentioned, on Swalox how the fish design works with flexing the tail, and that's just their opinion. I don't know that that's like a thing, but I gave some thought to that, and it's not a flex tail. It's not like that kind of rubber, whatever composite that people do that really flexes. It's just you have your swallow, and then I cut into that, so it's like this.
Uh-huh.
And so that will definitely, it's going to be like very like minimal flex, but that will flex,
but it's still foam inside.
It's foam. Yeah. It's foam, and it's not it's thinned out. It's not super thin, it's not like super foiled, but it's foiled enough that like if you have like basically a cut into your stringer, like that's a couple inches long, like, you know, when you're like, if you duck your board like a PU board through a wave, if it's like a heavier wave, you could feel it you know, cavitating or like flexing.
Yeah.
So with that much cut into the stringer, like I know that that's going to give some flex when I press it. Not like a flex tail that's super rubbery, but it's definitely going to, you know, respond.
So is that for slingshot effect, or is it like to make more rocker in the tail, or what's the purpose?
So I've heard different things about it. I'm just gonna have to ride it and see for myself, because I don't know. I've never ridden a a proper flex tail.
Mm.
I've ridden like a flex fin, which that definitely gives like a slingshot feeling. It's weird. It's like you kind of like, I made this little slingshot fin, flex fin that I put on a board. So you basically like drop in and get like kind of this little feeling of drift, and then it kind of tightens up, and then you sort of shoot in whatever direction you're going, which is fun. I'm kind of maybe expecting that type of experience with the flex tail, but you are changing the rocker. Yeah. So, you know, if the rocker's like this, so it's going to, yeah, it's going to bend up. I don't know.
Hmm.
We'll see. We'll see how that goes.
Yeah. Exciting. The original like fishy boards were knee boards, right?
Yeah.
And they were super flexy and like see-through and spaced out.
So, I mean, that's when I started looking at fish, I didn't look at fish stand-up boards. I wanted to research knee boards because the first fish that someone rode on was a knee board, which was, I'm forgetting the guy's name. It was a friend of Steve Liz who was like on the beach, who was from Hawaii, and he basically just like was like, let me try that.
Oh, okay.
So he stood up on a knee board, and that was what really like opened people's eyes. Like he was like, whoa, this is crazy. Everyone saw the way he was surfing. So that was on a knee board. So if I want to get the principles of what that was, I thought I should try to look at things that are as similar to that as possible.
Yeah.
Because the stand-up board has been adjusted for stand-up surfing, right? It's like everything that's a fish from that point forward is like, well, they had to do some things so that it'd be easier for people to paddle and stand up on them.
Mm-hmm.
But the design juice is in the knee board, yeah. I feel. So,
it's funny, even the swallow, the deep swallow, I don't know if they used swallows before that, but I saw this short fish documentary, and it came from Steve Liss like kneeling down and sketching the back of his swim fins.
Yeah, yeah.
That's crazy how that stuck around.
Yes, and I saw that as well. Yeah. And it's interesting to see how things develop, because we hang on so much to our theory, but sometimes things just happen for other reasons. But obviously it has a a practical impact on the way the board works.
Mm.
But it was just so that he wouldn't have drag on his fins.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Yeah. So I saw that. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. The PU, is that only because it's easier to work with where you are at, or is it just, do you prefer that?
No, well, so when I first came here, I was actually just getting EPS blocks and making blanks out of them. But the thing about EPS is that I find it to be a little harder to shape. And then if you get water in there, it's like, so I had a EPS board take on water, and I peeled it because I was going to, rework it. And then there was literally like water pouring out of it. So that just kind of like messed my head up. I mean, that's, that's a problem with the glassing. But the fact that could happen, like just like freaked me out.
Yeah.
So I'm not against EPS. Although now that I've been shaping with PU for the past like 2 years, I do like working with it better. So I'll probably stick with that. And then I also like surfing it better. I have a friend who, he only surfs PU blanks, and he's like, EPS is just too airy and light. And now I have to kind of agree with him.
Mm.
I mean, you could offset that. You could just glass it heavier.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like working with PU. So.
Yeah, I think it's either you like that flotation or it bothers you.
Yeah.
And for me, it's bothering me. I think it just bounces around.
I used to like it, and now I'm back on this. Yeah.
But I'm sure I would probably catch more waves on an EPS board.
So. It depends on like what's happening. If it's choppy, like it's going to be a problem, And here in Sweden, where you're getting a lot of wind swell, there's a lot of chop. So I think PU is probably the better call for here, but whatever works, I guess, for each person. You know?
It seems to be the more common option nowadays, EPS.
Mm.
I think from the big factories at least.
Yeah, I think people think it's more sustainable for some reason. I don't know about that, but you know, it's also like I don't need a board to be that light. Like I'm not throwing airs. I'm not like, a little momentum for me helps. I'm an older person. Like it's better if a little bit of weight, the board gets going and it kind of keeps going. So yeah, I don't need like a the lightest performance board possible.
No.
You know.
I was thinking maybe we could like go through the process of shaping.
Yeah.
And what you focus on for each part of the board.
Okay.
So if we start up top with the nose, mm-hmm. like the template of the nose.
Yeah.
Do you have like, oh, it's really wide or pulled in or whatever?
So I work with one template for all my fish boards, yeah. and I just adjust it. So the nose profile, I pretty much want to stay the same, which yeah. is definitely proportionally wide, you know, so if it's not as wide as like the next board, it should be similar with in terms of proportion of the whole board. Mm. So where you see the nose there is kind of like how I want all my boards to be.
Yeah.
And I use the same template for that. So it's forward. It's not super forward, but somewhat. I definitely want it to be wide and then come in to kind of like the beak or the point.
Yeah, it's kind of a pointy but full at the same time.
Yes, and I definitely want that. I like the way that feels on the paddle, and I like the way it feels when it's surfing.
Yeah, and then it's a kind of parallel rails.
Yes,
all the way back to the fins.
Yep, I'm a big fan of that. Yeah. For speed, and I've come to become very used to it. But that's where for me, I was very surprised by this board, because it turns over rail to rail and it kind of moves, you know, much more loosely than a board that has that type of parallel profile should.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm pretty excited about that.
Which brings us to the tail. Do you think that's because of the special tail that it rolls over?
It's hard to say. I'm trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
I feel like it's some combination of the tail, the rails, and the concave.
Yeah.
Because so what I'm feeling is, so basically the first time I rode it, it definitely paddles in, like you have to paddle in like as a spurt. You can't over paddle this board, which is what I'm kind of used to, because I ride thicker boards, which kind of glide in. But this one, it's like you can't do that because it's cutting into the wave pretty early. So you have to get going. If you kind of glide in, then you're picking up too much speed, and then it becomes like a hassle to stand up.
Oh, okay.
So that's kind of, that's kind of how I used to surf like 10 years ago. So I have to kind of rewind that.
Mm.
Then when you're surfing it, it's like, we talk about front footedness. Like if you're too much on your back foot, it will actually start to like stall. So that was a little bit concerning at first, because I was like, oh man, is this like not work? You know, it's like, mm-hmm. especially like over flat spots where it's like the fish is kind of known to like, oh yeah, you hit your flat spots and you're still going.
Yeah.
And this would kind of go on the drop and then hit flat spot and then just kind of like stall out. And I'd be like, oh man, that's like, this is bad. And then, but the last time I went out, and it was pretty small waves too, I kind of, got off the back foot a little bit and gave a more, not front foot, but even distribution. And I noticed it's very sensitive, so that I could actually carve on the wave just from like moving my feet, mm-hmm. you know? And from there, maybe I could like get on the tail, but I don't have to like, you know, lean back and like, sort of crouch into like a turn from the back of the board.
So it has a big sweet spot.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think it's the sweet spot would be the center board.
Mm-hmm.
And you turn from there,
yeah.
which again, there's, I have a need to get more feedback on that, because for me, that would be very new.
Yeah.
And if that's what's happening on the board, I definitely want to replicate that, mm-hmm. because that has like a whole world of potential for the way I surf. That could really like, you know, at the age of 50 could actually like shoot my surfing into like, you know, another level that's probably not physically possible at the age I'm at. So I hope that's what's going on, but that's what I'm feeling in that.
Is it a single concave?
Single concave. Yeah. I don't do any double concave. I know it's widely used, and I've read up on the principles of it, but I just can't wrap my head around it. Like single concave, your water's planing, you know, you can have it playing down like the front of the board, but also through the side of the board as it's going down the face. That makes sense to me.
Mm.
The double barrel or the double concave, like again, I've read about it, but I just, this is working for me. So I do all my things single to like flat at the back.
Yeah. Do you think the concave is a planing device or a way to adjust the rocker?
So I understand it best as a way to flatten the rocker.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I've obviously, not obviously, but I've read a lot about, you know, lift.
Yeah.
Through that.
But it seems like such a small difference, but maybe it makes a big difference.
I made a board to research that was, had a super deep concave and also had almost like a hydroplane on the sides, which is there's a word for that. That's not a new design, but it's like I did that so I could like really maybe experience lift. And I think it's there. I can feel it. That the board is kind of strange. I you know, it's definitely like a personal board. Mm. People could ride it, but I wouldn't like sell it to somebody because it's very idiosyncratic. So I definitely think lift is a thing. But I'm wondering if the rollover on the board and the sensitivity is connected to the concave, because that's what it feels like. It almost feels like it's hugging the shape of the water.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, what I've never read anything like that, and I try to research that, but you know, certain things like you plug it in and it's just too detailed. Maybe that's a conversation people have had, but you're not going to find that.
No.
So I don't know if that's a thing.
Maybe it's a secret, like they don't want to share it.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe I'm like, boy, they're like, oh, this fucking asshole. Like, but that's what I'm feeling. Mm-hmm. That it's that, you know, it's which would be the opposite of lift, honestly. So yeah, maybe someone who really knows about shaping is shaking his head like this guy's talking crazy. But that, I think the concave is contributing to the rollover.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Because normally that would be a V, right? For a
that, so, and I've put V in boards, and that's like with like the results were like super, super loose and kind of hard to control.
Okay.
I don't use V. I don't know much about it. I made many years ago, like a kind of hull fish sort of. It's a little weird. It kind of, because it's kind of hulled out in, or like bellied out in the nose. So plows water when you take off.
Then you really have to paddle, right?
It's a little tricky, but when you get going, it's definitely like an interesting sensation because you're like the hull, you're in the wave. So it's a different type of speed. I don't, that's another like rabbit hole I could go down, but I just don't use it. And I don't use V, just because I didn't want to introduce anything to like introduce another element into something I'm trying to figure out. So this thing with maybe the concave contributing to the rollover is unexpected, maybe unfounded, but again, that's what I'm thinking. Cause I wasn't really looking for a loose surfboard, because then that requires more attention in my surf. You know, I'm not trying to make the board harder for me to surf. I'm not trying to make it like more performance than I need it to be.
No.
But again, like it's sort of like, oh, it's doing this, it's rolling over. And at first I was like disconcerted, and now I'm like, that could be, you know, really helpful.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, again, we'll see.
Yeah, is it easy or not easy? But does it happen that you put too much into a design, like, oh, I want this and this and this and this, and it just gets bloated, sort of?
That can happen. I don't do it anymore because I'm very careful to like, you know, stick to the things that have worked for me, and then strip that down. That's kind of what was happening with the blocky boards, where I had all these ideas about what I wanted. And I know it sounds like, well, it's a block, you're doing less. But all that was like design driven. It's like, I want to be like paddle really well, but go really fast and do this. And then you got that was, to me, was like over designed, even though it looks under designed. To me, the foiling of the board is actually, in my journey, is less design, because that's more in line with standard shaping principles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not trying to innovate. I'm just trying to use ideas that are tried and true. Whereas with the blocky boards, I was like, I'm going to go like, this is how I want to do it.
Mm.
And yeah, I mean, they definitely were really unique boards, super strange and not easy to surf.
Is it tempting to try to reinvent the wheel every time, or just like... look at the basics, you know?
It's tempting to reinvent the wheel, but there's only but so much time in my life.
Yeah.
So if I was like, had a lifespan of like 200 years, I'd probably still be making crazy, you know, blocky boards. Yeah. But as you can see, like this is a different, you know, like this is me trying to make a normal board and it's still coming out really different.
Yeah, but that's what makes it unique. I think it's really important to have a niche in whatever you're doing.
Like, yeah.
You can't look at someone else.
No, and also like with shaping, it doesn't take much deviation to create something really different.
Yeah.
Like everything's kind of already been done, but not by me, you know? So someone's probably already done this someplace else, but I haven't experienced it. And so you do one thing a little bit different on your board and you have a whole different thing. So that's why I always get kind of, I never understand what people are like, oh, I'm bored with this, I want to go to that. And it's like, but if you just change that one little thing, then you'd have a whole other thing. I mean, it's fine, you know, try different things, explore, you know, ride mats or do foils or whatever, but you don't have to, like, you know, you can just alter this tiny little thing and you'll have a whole other universe to explore.
The rails are pretty sharp from nose to tail.
Yeah.
Yeah, just for speed.
So that was a little accidental because I wanted to thin the board out a little bit. And the way I shape, I've used an electric planer, but I don't use an electric planer now because where I surf again, I have to keep the noise, where I shape, I have to keep the noise down because it's not like a proper, it's basically the basement storage in our building, you're not supposed to be doing that in there. Yeah. And it's cool, but like I keep it on the low, like nobody knows what I'm doing there. I don't think anyone's going to be listening to this podcast.
No. What about the dust though? Do you have like
But it's a closed room.
Okay.
So yeah, I'm good. I'm self-contained. But I could maybe do planing down there, but I'm taking a major risk because it's like planing foam is like super loud.
Yeah.
So what I end up doing is I skin the blank, and then I hand shape it with the SureForm down.
Mm-hmm.
So if I want to thin the board out, I do it from the rails in.
Okay.
So I was kind of doing that, and then I was seeing this other thing that's happening where I was getting the rail reduction, and I was kind of like, oh, let me go with that, you know, which is how a lot of things in my shaping transpire. I have a loose idea of what I want to do, but if I see something that is starting to take place, then I just do that. That's what happened with the fish and the one I'm making now, the classic fish and the flex tail. I didn't start out being like, I'll make a flex tail, but I was like working on the swallow, and then I was like having some trouble with that. And I was like, you know what? I'm just gonna cut in and I'm gonna do a flex, like, you know, I'm do a flex tail. Like, that's what I'm doing. So with the rails, it's like I was going for a thinner board, and then with the rails, I was like, all right, I'm gonna commit to that.
Yeah.
And then I went full in on that.
I think a sharp rail, it can never be too sharp, but it can be too round, I think. It's worse if it's too round.
Traditionally, I've always favored like a rounder thing, but it is. So again, and these boards teach me, because it's, for me, the rounder is, it's a comfort level, right?
Yeah.
And you have like stability, but you are losing a couple things there. Like you paddle in, which is where, like, again, where I say like, oh, you know, maybe friends of mine won't always surf the boards. It's like, but I understand, because the things that I have to do to paddle in, it's like, I'm used to doing those things, right? So I can catch plenty of waves, but for them to get on that board, it's like it's like a shocker. It's like they have to reinvent their surfing. And, you know, no one wants to do that in a span of a session. But so I've always like favored, like, I used to do boxy rails. I don't do those anymore, but thicker rails. That's why I was kind of like, you know what? Like, these rails are getting pretty thin. Like, try that. And that's when I'm again experiencing like a rollover that I've never experienced before. And people have told me that, and I definitely see the design asset. And, you know, if your rails are too beefy, it's kind of hard to get in the wave. And, you know, you're also the thing is, if you have beefier rails, you can actually stomp your turn harder, right? Mm-hmm. So if you have a thinner rail, it's gonna roll over for you better. but then, you know, you can't, like, if you press too, like, you kind of have to be a skilled surfer to, like, really push the turn, because what you're going to happen is you're going to press too hard, you're going to fly over the handlebars or whatever.
Yeah.
So with a beefier rail, it's not going to respond for you as quickly, but you can actually commit more to the turn because it can, it's not going to, that extra flotation is not going to sink as hard. So you could push it harder. And that's more of a sensation. It's not like, oh, you're going to get a better turn out of that. But you get to feel like, you know, I'm really like giving it that thing. Whereas like, if to do that on a more performance board, you got to be a better surfer. So like the boards I'd make, like I feel like I'm shredding. Maybe from the beach, it's like, oh yeah, he's just kind of doing a little check turn off the top. But I get to like, you know, and you punctuate it.
You feel the G-force.
Yeah, right. You get to feel it. And for me, like surfing is way more about the feeling than the look, you know?
Mm. When I try to do a power turn, I just sink the board every time.
Yeah. You can do that with a beefier rail. You can feel the power turn.
Yeah.
Maybe you're not executing a power turn. Maybe you're just, you know, doing a little like kind of a soft wrap back, but you feel like, oh yeah. And I've definitely done cutbacks with thicker rails where I feel like the wind, you know, like I'm like, feel like I'm flying, and people be like, wow, that was really nice. But again, going down this direction, I'm pretty excited to see the performance aspect of that thinner rail. So
yeah. I think keeping the speed is everything, right?
Speed is, you know, it's, I mean, I'm gonna say yes, but you know, I don't know, maybe there's a, you know, maybe there's another design alley with like a slower board. I mean, you can definitely outrun the wave. Like that's a classic fish problem where it's like you're going fast, so you have to be able to cut back.
Oh, yeah, it gets tricky.
Which is fun. But you know, that's a design challenge for sure. But who doesn't like speed?
So. I know, but you need a long wall for that too. Like here where I surf, it's like short waves. So you need to fit in your turns, like.
Well, so that's, you know, that's why I'm kind of looking at this as like, because before where it's like my boards would project more, then it's like you get that, again, wall, you know, flatness, then reform. So basically it's like I'd end up like being able to maybe get a walled up section at the end of the wave, right? Because the middle of the wave, I'm just kind of cruising.
And losing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, it's fun, you know, I'm surfing, right? Like it's going... So that's one of the first things I thought of with this board when I felt that was like, oh, okay, like maybe I can get more surfing done in the span of the wave, you know, because you can do that. Like definitely Tuta is like, you want to hit your turn quickly, you know, but not all my boards do that, you know? So more it's like, you know, pump quickly and then make sure you're navigating to a place on the reform that you're going to be able to keep going. Because if I like project out too far, then you're on the shoulder of a reform, you're not going anywhere. So I got like, I'm projecting, make sure you cut back in so that where it reforms, you can then start to pump down the wall that is going to, you know, happen.
Mm.
So yeah, I'm expecting some new things from this.
Oh, nice. And the fins, this one is a quad.
Yeah.
Is it always going to be like that? Or
I'm going to do another one like this with the different fins, but also a quad setup. I have the board before this works really well. I haven't surfed it enough because now I'm like on this trip, but that's a keel fin. And it's like, it's very responsive. Like I surfed it at Super Tubos with a group of guys I went down there with. Shout out to those guys, Peter and Johan and all them. And that like worked really well in basically like pumping conditions that were like walled up beach break. So that thing surfs really good. So I will be doing more keel fin, modern quote unquote boards. So I'll go between keels and quads. I haven't had much success with like just the upright twin fins and the fish design. I had also read that someone was like, those don't really belong on fish. Again, just some guy's opinion who, you know, but it's this person who knows a lot about building boards.
Yeah.
I tried it and the way I did it, I'm probably going to take those off and put on keels.
Yeah, because you glass them on always.
Yeah, so I'm a big proponent of glass on fins. So much so that now it's like I can't even think about like using fin boxes. Whereas that before, that's all I did was like use fin box. I'm not against it, but just for my own shaping, it would be hard. If someone was like, oh, could you put in boxes? Like I would totally do it, but I'd sort of be a little reluctant because just for like my ideas on it and also for the aesthetic. Like I love the way it looks. I love like glassing on fin, especially with the fish surfboard. I travel with them, you know, people I know, they like fin boxes for traveling, right? Yeah. One, two, to be able for versatility to change up your thing. But for my own personal thing, it's like, I don't believe in that. Not for other people. I think people should do what they want. But for me, I think that, that glass on fins are more versatile in the sense that like, if I make you a board and you're like, this fin setup isn't working, it's true. The first thing we're going to think of is like the fin shape, right? The actual fin. But another part of it is the placement of the fin, which you cannot change in a fin box. I mean, you could, but I mean, could you? Like, you got to route out. I feel like the board is destroyed at that point.
Yeah.
Whereas with glass on fins, it's, you know, it's a little pain. It's a pain in the butt, but you could totally like take them off, regroup the fins. You know, you could recant them. You know, you could do all this stuff and put on a whole new fin if you think that's the problem. So in a way, I think they're more adjustable, but it requires like that shaper surfer relationship and there's more investment. You can't just pop it out and be like, oh, the waves are like this today. No. I'm gonna put this fin in. So I get that part of it. But for me, I think there's more more asset to the glass on fin. And then, I mean, you can't argue with like it's glassed on. So in terms of streamline, the glass on fin is the most streamlined fin, you know, there is. But I get the, you know, the reasons why people use fin boxes or plugs, but also for traveling, like I just put some foam blocks on them. I've never had a fin break for traveling. I feel like if the fin's going to break off, if you pack it properly, then it's like your board could easily snap. Like if it's that level of trauma that your fin's going to snap off, if you've packed it properly, then your board's probably going to break in half anyways.
I have all of my boards have boxes, but I'm too lazy to switch out the fins anyway. So I just surf the same fins every time.
So that's another thing too. I also like, I'm not a big fin switcher.
No.
So that was another thing where I was like, how often do I switch my fins? And it's also a little interesting that like, you know, there's all this like design work that goes into a board, right? That's like, but let's think about like more like reputable, you know, well-known influential shapers. So they put all this precision stuff, right? It's like the board has to be just like this. I made it just this way, so it does just this thing. But you could put whatever fin you want in it. It's like, it seems to me like you wouldn't be like, oh, I made this board for you, but here, clip on this different nose, you know? You'd be like, but it has to be like this. So I think it's interesting that all this work goes into them, but this really critical part of the board, the fin, is like totally left up to the consumer.
That's true. Yeah.
Which is great, but I think it's kind of like,
it's good and bad.
Yeah, it's interesting.
With this, you know, you get the matching fin for the board.
Right. But it's the way I think it should. So I get, you know, it's like if I sell a surfboard to somebody, I would love for them to be like, hey, take the board out and try it first. Like, you know, that's the way I would do it. So that we could, because really another thing is like, I don't do custom shaping only because I'm not that skilled to be, you know, like if you have an idea and input, I'll totally try to build it in, but I know I can do this.
Yeah.
So that's what I'll promise you. Like I can make you this and we could do some adjustments, you know, that, but if you're like, I want a custom shape with like, you know, I want, double concave to V with like this type of rail, whatever. It's like, you're going to have to see somebody. I'll point you in a direction of somebody who I think can do that well for you.
You know your limitation, right?
Yeah, I mean, and you know, it's like I said with the DJing, it's like, I know what I'm trying to, you know, I'm it's not fair for me to promise you, you know, I'm going to DJ your party and whatever you like, I'm going to play and then show up and be like, you're hearing this, you know? So same with the shaving, it's like, that's not really what I do.
No.
But there's some really amazing people that like do that
and
you should go see them, you know?
That's a good mentality, I think.
I mean, you know, I want to be fair. Surfboards are expensive, you know.
How much is one of your boards?
I would charge $600, but I mean, I could go down to $500. Like I try to build into the cost of what it takes me to make. I don't build into like how many hours I spend making it.
No.
Yeah, I'd rather get under somebody's feet. Yeah. If I ever do have a surf shop, I'll have to maybe charge to something that keeps the doors open.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point, it's like I'd much rather, for me, the selling of surfboards is just the sharing of the experience.
Mm.
And then helping me to buy more supplies to keep, you know, to keep shaping it.
Yeah.
That's like the primary thing.
How long has this, the Pray for Surf brand, how long have you been doing it that way?
So that is basically coming up on a year now.
Yeah.
And I find it's hard for me to come up with the label for surfboards because I think it can just get so cheesy so easily and mm-hmm. it doesn't really articulate. So when I came up with Pray for Surf, I was like, I like that. You know, I'll stick with that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I feel it's pretty relatable. It's pretty basic and it's not too pretentious.
No.
You know, so I've been just doing that. But nowadays, I'm not even putting logos on the boards. I'm just going to put like art. Mm. And leave them logo-less. I use the Pray for Surf logo for like my clothing and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, more like a logo is more appropriate for that. But for a garage shaper like myself, you know, some of the most beautiful boards I'd see like on Sway Locks or whatever have no logo.
Mm.
And they're just like, they're incredible, you know, incredible boards. So that inspired me to be like, you can let the board speak for itself.
Yeah.
So I kind of do that. But still the label is Pray for Surf, yeah.
Yeah. And you do the color work is resin, so it's like all, below the glassing?
It's all resin, and it's weird because I'm not against like spray jobs or anything like that. But for me, I just fell in love with like resin color work. So all the color work besides the actual like image, which is the rice paper, you know, rice paper image, which is like the guy swimming.
Yeah, this one.
Yeah.
And I like that.
Yeah. So that's obviously not resin work. But everything else is all resin.
Mm-hmm. Is that hard to get it right?
It is. It is. And, you know, there are parts of this board that, you know, aren't like completely like 100% the way I want it, but it's a process.
It's cool. You can almost feel the edge of the color.
Yeah. Yeah. It's I love color resin work.
Yeah.
I've really, you know, come to enjoy it quite a bit. And then I'm super inspired to see like the giants of glassing and the resin work they do and the appreciation for that. It's so I do all my color work in resin.
Mm.
But I'm not against spray work. It's just for me, it's like my passion.
Yeah. How much time do you spend on one board?
You know, it's funny, it doesn't have to take as long as it does, but I have two children.
Yeah.
So my shaping process is like my son falls asleep, you know, my daughters and doggies. I go down if I can get an hour or two, mm-hmm. you know, I do that. And then for glassing, I have to do it at like midnight because when everyone's asleep, because glass work, it's like you need as much time as you need. So, yeah. You know, you're doing your lamination and if something is happening that you need to address, you can't be like, I've definitely had it where it's like, I got to go.
Mm.
And now the lam is like kind of messed up because I can't address what's happening.
Mm.
So a board can take me 2 weeks to make, but it really should take like a couple of days. Well, the glass work takes as long as it takes because it has to cure and then you got to flip and whatever.
Mm.
But the shaping of the board should go, like I should be able to, I've done two boards in like 6 hours.
Wow.
Shaping in California in a proper shaping bay. But here it's going to take me probably like 3 or 4 days to shape it and going down there in increments and whatever. And I'm not in a rush. I actually don't mind that because then it's like I get to shape, you know, then I absorb, you know, come back down and think about it. I mean, there's definitely something to be said for people like production shape where it's just like it's like intuitive and reflexive. Like they just know what they're doing. Their hands know what's supposed to happen. The way I shape, it ends up being more cerebral because I'm not shaping like 1,000 boards. Shaping, you know, then attending to my family, then coming back the next day and then noticing something. So it can take, like a build will take 2 weeks,
yeah.
But it doesn't have to take that long.
But if someone would want to buy a board from you, you would say like, yeah, come back in 2 weeks. Or...
Yeah, I give them 3 weeks just to be safe. You know, like I do some ding repair as well.
Yeah.
And yeah, you know, I just do like a week, you know, just to give it enough time. Mm. And I'm like, I really want to do more ding repair. My friend Johan was like, oh, you should put some signs up at Tuda, but I don't really want to put signs up. It's like a very natural place.
Yeah.
But I do want people to know about that because I think that taking care of your surfboard is a big part of sustainability. Like our boards are toxic. That's just the way it is. I know there's people who are trying to do more sustainable things and maybe we'll get there. But at this point, like holding onto your board and taking good care of it. Mm. So even if you like replace it, that you could sell it, you know, like just pass it on to somebody else in good condition. I think it's really important. So I just want to offer that, not as, I mean, obviously it costs a little money, but not as a financial like revenue thing, but just because I think it's kind of part of my responsibility to help people take, I know how to glass, I know how to do that. So I should help people do that. So I definitely want to put the word out with that.
That's awesome. So what's your vision or dream about the Pray for Surf brand, so to speak? Do you want to keep it like it is now? Like you do a board here and there, or do you want to make it your primary like work?
So I'm gonna embarrass myself with a little bit of my fantasy. So definitely small scale. I mean,
there should be dream and there should be like goals and like reality, but you should have them all, I think.
So I'm going to give you my dream. Yeah. My dream is still small scale. And I think for surfboard building, a lot of this stuff we're encountering with the growth of the industry, a lot of it, the problems that come with scaling. Like you can't, in my opinion, if I want to be like, I want to service Sweden, Norway, Spain, and Portugal, then it's like you're talking about large scale manufacturing, any way you cut it. Like one of the principles of Pray for Surf is like unmilled blanks. And you know, some people do that. That's cool. For me, it's when I came up in surfing, there were a lot of ideologies that were sold to me as like a new surfer, right? Some of them I got rid of, some of them I want to keep, because you know, some of them I think are BS and some of them I think are really valuable. The like hand shaping like ideology really, like I fell in love with it and it stuck with me. So shaping a blank is for me, you know, like that's part of the ethos of Pray for Surf.
So when you say unmilled, does that mean that it hasn't been through a CNC machine?
Right. Okay. Yeah, for me. And you know, people use design software and whatever, and that's, I'm not against that. But this is like how I like to do it.
Yeah.
So that's the one. So small scale. And then here's the embarrassing part. It's like, I would love it if people were like, yo, your boards are amazing. You know, like just the acknowledgement that if someone were to take a board and ride it and be like, this board is rad. Yeah. And like the glasswork is amazing. I'd be like super stoked on this. I guess that's a bit of an ego thing, but that's my dream. You know, someone just walk up and be like, oh yeah, that guy makes amazing boards. So just to get that level there. And then, to have a small shop that people come in and the shop would pay for itself.
Yeah.
So that I wouldn't have to lose any money and I could be there and work there. And if I needed to employ somebody, obviously that they get paid and taken care of. The clothing part of it to me, the big thing with that, I'm not super into clothing, but the reason why I kind of went that way is because I know a lot of people who really are interested in surfing, but they don't want to surf. They just admire it and are, you know, friends, and they really think it's really amazing, but they're not necessarily going to make it out to the ocean. And I realized like, I want to share surfing with them too. So clothing seemed to be a way to do that. And then that's how I got into like, I want to make high quality clothing, because I come from an urban background and, you know, it's like, I get kind of like mellow style surf clothing because we're going to the beach. You know, like we don't need like, not just need, like I don't want to wear something nice when I'm going to be lounging around and get like seaweed on it or whatever. But you know, if you live in a city, like 90% of the time it's like this, like New York City especially is like a economically hostile environment, right? And it's so like the way we put together our identity and our values does happen a lot with our clothing. So you know, I want that to be something that is valuable and meaningful to those people who are like friends, who are interested. And you know, I come from kind of like a like urban sensibility. So yeah. I make the clothes that look like how I want them to look. And also my idea about inclusiveness is, you know, to open the door to people who are, you know, like where I come from. It's not I come from a Black and Latino neighborhood in New York. I'm part Puerto Rican myself. And maybe that's not like a traditional surf community, but I use the idea of the aesthetics that I came up with to create something that looks appealing to the people who I grew up around as a form of inclusion and interest. Yeah. You know, and if anybody wants to come to the beach, of course, like they're welcome, But you don't have to. Like, people seem to think that surfing is like the ultimate thing and everyone needs to do it. But like, it is for me. I know it is for surfers.
Yeah.
But everyone else is like, they have meaningful lives. Mm-hmm. You know, they're doing the things they want to do, but they should feel welcome should the interest, you know, come to them.
Yeah.
So the clothing to me is just like that. Like, this is something to share with people.
I like that. Like, you can be part of something without being like a poser.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. Mm. You know, and just, you're just showing your interest.
Yeah.
And I welcome that. And I want those people to, cause they're a part of my journey. Like, mm-hmm. most of the people who, like, when I post stuff on the gram, 90% of people who are like, yo, that's amazing. They're not surfers.
No.
They're people who I know in life, but they're really happy to see me doing what I love. And I guess the ethos of Pray for Surf, both as a surfboard and clothing, is to encourage people to live the life they love.
Mm-hmm.
That's like the bottom line. Like, again, surfing's not the most amazing thing. It's the most amazing thing for me. if for you, like, what's amazing is taking pictures,
yeah.
then I want you to do that. Or I hate jogging, but if you love jogging, like, you know, then that's the life that you love.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, so having a shop that kind of finds a way to promote that, like music, having, you know, a couple of events,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, people just showing up. Like, I'd be so stoked if people would like show up, you know, to a place that I had,
yeah.
and gather there and congregate there. The only problem is I'm not really a people person. So I understand why, like, there's not a crowd of people gathering around me.
All right.
Like, if you surf with me, you know, you, like, people at Twitter, like, they're very friendly.
Yeah.
But they probably don't think I'm the friendliest person in the water, you know? Okay. Because I'm kind of like, you know, trying to surf and whatever. And Swedish surfers are really friendly. They always say hi and
yeah.
whatever. So I want community, but, you know, I have a little bit of trouble fostering it. But, you know, I love that Swedish surfers are so friendly and they talk, and I wish I could be a part of that. But so in a shop, that's why I'd want to have that.
Yeah.
I want people to show up. I want to, like, have a little music and just everyone to enjoy and, you know, yeah. So that's my dream.
Yeah, it sounds makeable, I think.
I think I'm gonna take
Stockholm would be a good place.
I'm gonna give it my best shot.
Yeah,
you know,
give it the 3 years.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and we'll see where it goes. And if it doesn't, that's cool.
Yeah.
You know, I love surfing in Sweden. I love the surf community here. I love the waves here.
Mm.
So there's no loss. You know, it's a win-win. And I shape surfboards. If I wasn't doing PFS, I'd still be shaping surfboards.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like, oh, I'm doing this and nobody's coming through. What a waste of time. It's like, I'll be shaping surfboards probably till the day, you know, till I can't.
Yeah.
So yeah. So it's a win-win.
Mm. Cool. Hey, I've been asking a ton of questions. I was thinking maybe you could choose some questions yourself.
Oh, okay.
I have two boxes. It's the surf brag box and the surf shame box. It's the gray one.
Could I take one from each?
Oh, sure. Which one do you want to start with?
Let's do brag and then shame.
Bragging, okay. They're in Swedish, so can you read Swedish?
I cannot.
No, I have to translate, but you get the pick.
Let me try reading it just so I can embarrass myself. Hur många av dina brädor är custom?
Yeah, how many of your surfboards are custom shaped? So that would be all of them.
Yeah, yeah, they're all customized for me.
Yeah, yeah, that's kind of a braggy thing, right?
Okay, like, we could do another one.
Yeah, do another one.
Hur många brädor aga du?
How many boards do you have?
Oh, too many at this point. It's not that many, but for me, it's like there's probably like 12 surfboards sitting around down there.
Oh, it's not too bad.
No, it's just, you know, I.
They're like, not like $1,000 boards.
Well, not, they're all made by me. So this board, I mean, well, that's not including boards I have in New York. So boards in New York is probably like 20, mm-hmm. 25. But I've sold off the boards in New York that I could. And they all sold really, really quickly. The boards I have here, there's a couple I could sell, but a lot of them are like there's this one board. It's like really experimental. It's just the weirdest thing I've ever tried to stand up on. So there's boards that's like, I'm going to be stuck with those because I don't want to get rid of them, but I'm not going to sell it to you because it's just too bananas.
Like, yeah, yeah, okay.
So, yeah. But some of these, like these, this is a personal board, but like my personal boards, I would sell used. If someone saw them and they were like, oh, I think it's really cool. If they wrote it, you know, I'd definitely sell those used. Mm. No problem.
25 boards in 50 years, that's reasonable, I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, I've had other boards, but I'm, you know, I don't want to be accumulating too many boards.
No,
yeah.
You're not a hoarder.
No, no.
Do you want to do another brag question or a shame?
Let's do a shame.
Okay.
How awful is my Swedish?
That's good.
Because my wife would be like, I can't understand you. All right, let's see. Har du missat någon riktigt bra prognos på sistone?
Did you miss out on a good swell lately?
I missed out on a good swell that I was there.
Oh,
and
I
cooked it up. Yeah. I came to Tuta. I mean, this was really, I had an epiphany during the session, but came to Tuta. It was cold. There were like two or three guys out. And the waves looked amazing. They were a little overhead.
Mm.
And these dudes were shredding. Like, there's some good guys who surf at Tuta. Normally, you don't see this level of surfing. They were like blowing out the tail, throwing some airs. Some guy had a camera on the beach. They were Swedes. I could hear them speaking Swedish.
Mm-hmm.
I don't surf at that level, but I was like, all right, I'm gonna get down with the, you know, like they're tearing it up. I'm gonna do my little thing. And man, it was like my second time on this board, and it was just not going my way. Like So I was there, but I definitely missed the swell.
Oh, okay.
And I surfed to exhaustion, and then the last wave I caught, that's when I started to get like an epiphany on this board and be like, oh, I'm surfing it wrong.
Mm.
So it was totally valuable, but yeah, I'm still thinking, I'm like, man, like...
A little bit ashamed.
More ashamed than I feel I should be. I should not be ashamed at all, but I definitely hang my head low. Like I walked out there like... And they had left by the time like my session was over. So I was like, I'm glad there wasn't too many people out to see that, you know? So yeah, that was a little walk of shame there.
All right. Okay, so one final shame question.
Okay. Oh no, I pronounce this. Luer duom tubed.
Do you lie about getting tubed?
No, I do not. maybe, I wonder if I did when I was like earlier in my surfing. I've my skill level for two riding has started to jump up a little. Mm-hmm. I don't get to surf bowing waves too much. When I was like younger in my surfing, I actually didn't care about two riding. So like a throwing wave, I was just kind of like, I wasn't really trying to do that. But I know that there's times when I think I'm really like in it and I'm just like getting a little splash. So yeah, no, I don't really claim tubes like that.
No.
But you know,
it'd be hard to control yourself though when you get out of it.
Yeah. What do I do when I get out of it? I don't know. Like, I'm trying to think the last time. I mean, there was this session of Rockaway I had over the spring that it was a great tube riding session, but there was nobody around.
Mm.
So it was like me and two other guys. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I guess if I haven't been filmed, then I guess I could claim it,
yeah.
You know, like, you know, but I'm not a big tube riding claimer. It's really way more about the sensation than the, because I don't really, as an art form, I don't really think much of it. Like, I think it's pretty like, yeah, you just go and you park and, you know, obviously some guys are better at it than others, but as an experience, that's where it's at.
The vision.
Like, yeah. And the feeling is like you feel, it's kind of silly, but you like, you sound like you're in a toilet bowl. It's like, whoosh, like you're being flushed somewhere. And it's just, it's very unique. And yeah, seeing that water like come over you. I'm not super experienced in it, but you know, there's some moments that I can recall that I was like, and then recently, with Super Tubos, like I didn't get tubed at all.
Mm.
But it was just, it was a great session.
Yeah.
So yeah, you know, but when it happens, it's totally, and then there's the tube closeout where you're in there and you just get obliterated, you know.
Kind of counts.
Yeah, I'll claim it and I'll make sure to tell you that like I got destroyed in there.
Yeah, that's good. Okay, so I have a final little segment. I call it Once More, Always Never.
Okay.
It's hard. I had to translate live.
Yeah.
But I say three spots and you get to choose one that you want to surf forever.
Okay.
One that you can surf just once more.
Okay.
And one never again.
Okay.
So the first one is Kosa Beach, right where we're at.
Okay.
And second one would be Tura then.
Okay.
And we can throw in Rockaway then. Rockaway Beach.
Oh man, that's tough. Is it Once More?
Mm-hmm.
Never?
And Forever.
And Forever. Oh. Well, I'm going to say Never the Cosa, just because I've never surfed it.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm gonna,
you don't know what you're missing.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want to like, it looks pretty good, but yeah. I'm going to, and then, oh man, I love surfing Tura, but Rockaway is so close. So I'll say I like surfing Tuna more than Rockaway.
Mm-hmm.
But Rockaway is so close to my heart. I can't imagine never surfing that again.
You get one more.
Yeah, but so one more kind of sucks for Rockaway because it's like, it's hard to get it. Like yeah. You know, it's like one more, you'd have to be the perfect, like, you know, all the conditions have to align and then you'd have to make sure not to kook it up.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, if it was like, if I was surfing Rockaway and everything was lined up, and it was like, this is the last time you're ever going to surf it, I'd probably blow it, you know? So, God, that is a super tough question. Yeah. I'm going to say go with Rockaway Forever, Tuda One More.
All right.
Although I'm going to be living in Sweden, so that would be kind of stupid.
Yeah, that would be hard.
Yeah.
We'd be but shaping
this is hypothetical.
More.
Yeah, right. Now I was going to shave in Sweden and not surf much.
Yeah. That's good.
Rockaway is like where I quote unquote grew up. Like, you know, again, I started surfing. I was already a man, but like all those experiences and the time I learned to surf was like it was a really amazing time at Rockaway that will never come again. Mm-hmm. I mean, what it is now compared to what it was then, it's just night and day. And so for that, I guess it's going to have to be like the love of my, you know, surf life.
Yeah. Yeah. I get that. So if someone want to read more about your boards and the PFS, where do they go?
So I have the Instagram, which is, was it PFS Surfboards?
Yeah.
And then I have a website, which is garagesalesurfer.com.
Yeah. That's a good domain.
Yeah. So those two places. And yeah, I mean, if anybody ever wants to, like, I really want people to communicate. So you don't, if you want to reach out to me, it doesn't have to be about like buying a board,
all right.
You know, if you just have any questions or if you have any questions about shaping, like I totally encourage people to shape their own board. I get like the glassing, I get it. It's, and here you guys don't have like glass shops that are going to glass your board for you. So I get it. But, if you have any questions on how to do it, you know, I'll be totally transparent about my background. Like I'm self-taught, so I'm not going to be over here like, this is the way you have to do it. This is how I do it.
Yeah.
And I'd love for people to reach out and I just want to share what I have. And, I'm planning on doing a, what do you call that? A board demo. Mm-hmm. So I have a couple of people who follow me on, the gram who are like, oh yeah, the board looks really cool. Or they'll give me some compliments. And, I'm really into people just trying the boards.
Yeah.
And it's not about like, you don't have to be committed to buying something. I'm not ready to sales. I would love people to just check it out, you know, and experience the boards just to do that. Not to be like, oh, I don't want to buy it. It's like, it's not about that.
No.
So yeah, any communication like that, reach out to me. Yeah.
Okay. So cool. It was, really nice to hear about your boards and
your
background and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we'll see you again somehow.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
This has
thanks
been awesome.
For coming. It's been super good chatting to you.
Yeah.
And,
tack så mycket.
Tack.
Ha det bra.
Ciao. Det här var Vinden podcast. Följ oss gärna i sociala medier. Där heter vi @vindenvbg. Om du har förslag på något ämne eller någon gäst du skulle vilja se och höra här i studion så får du gärna mejla till podcast@vindenvbg.se eller skicka ett DM. Vi hörs snart igen hoppas jag. Tills dess, ha det bra.